Welcome to the Smichael Speaks podcast channel. I'm Joanne Smichael, and I'm delighted that you tuned in for relevant leadership learning that will help you continue to soar. Enjoy this episode. With all these rampant attacks on equity, diversity, and inclusion in so many organizations and so many social sectors, I think it's more important than ever to address the competencies. I'll start again. Good morning, Dan. This is take two of Exploring Inclusive Leadership. Lord have mercy. With all of the rampant attacks on equity, diversity, and inclusion in so many organizations, in so many social sectors, I think it's more important than ever to address the competencies required to create inclusivity. This podcast is for anyone interested in bridge building. It's for anyone interested in creating the human bonds that will protect us all. So what is it? What is inclusive leadership? In my mind, it's the intentional effort that leaders make to bring all people, all voices, all styles into the fold. It's about not leaving people out. This means that even the contrarians are welcome. It means that the reticent are invited in. It means that people with diverse perspectives, perspectives not aligned with those of the leader, they're all welcomed. Well, that's my take on it. Now, the Center for Creative Leadership has a much more eloquent way of defining it. They say inclusive leaders are aware of their own biases, can keep them in check, and intentionally look for different perspectives. They use those perspectives to help them make very sound, wise, well-informed decisions. And these decisions are surely better than the decisions they would have made if they were guided by their own limited thinking. Well, before I go a whole lot further, I want to spend a little time on the traits that we would expect an inclusive leader to have. But before I get to that, let me tell you what I mean when I say trait. I'm not talking about genetic hardwiring. I'm talking about a distinguishing characteristic or a quality that a person possesses. Some of them come up naturally, and others are cultivated with time and experience. Traits produce behaviors, and behaviors produce results. First trait, humility. This is genuine modesty. It's regarding all other human beings as equals, as worthy. And I think humility also entails a lack of pretentiousness. Second trait, empathy. This is the ability to sense what another person is feeling. It's the compassion that we feel and share with one another. It's our ability to have some understanding of another person's feelings. It's our ability to share in each other's feelings. Third one is discernment. I think of this as a partner to wisdom. It's the ability to judge well, the ability to size up situations and understand subtle nuances. It's the ability to perceive and understand things that are not necessarily straightforward. Fourth trait, vulnerability. I know this sounds real woo-woo-woo and touchy-feely to some people who are listening, but it's really important. The dictionary defines vulnerability as the possibility or potential of exposure to hurt, harm, or peril. And this is real. When we take any risk, there is always the possibility that we're going to be hurt, we might damage our reputation, we might threaten our livelihood, and there may be other forms of personal discomfort. Fifth trait, the fifth one is inquisitiveness. That's the desire, the intellectual curiosity that leads us to want to know how other people experience the world, because we don't all experience it the same. This type of leader wants to know and learn without being critical, without being judgmental. They research, they ask questions, because they really genuinely want to know. Sixth trait, courageousness. Courage is the ability to confront something difficult or dangerous. The willingness to face the unknown or the uncertain. It's putting intimidation aside and having a spine. Those are the six traits of inclusive leaders, the six that I think are important. I'm sure there are more, but These are the top ones on my list: humility, empathy, discernment, vulnerability, inquisitiveness, and courageousness. So there are practices that inclusive leaders use. The first one is being collaborative. That means getting out of silos, forming partnerships, engaging with people on purpose. Collaborative leaders cultivate their skills at connecting people to one another and to the work. Recognizing that collaborating is fundamental, even foundational, in inclusive leadership, it's essential that a leader who wants to build bridges get comfortable being both team leader and team member. It's okay to let somebody else be in charge. It's okay not to have to be the point person on every project. Inclusion means taking collaborating a step further and opening the door so that others can emerge. This idea of effective collaboration assumes that the conditions are right. That means roles and responsibilities are clear. It also means that people are encouraged to speak up. Dialogue is so important. It's vital. Leaders have to draw out even the most shy, most reticent employees so that they can become full collaborators. When people feel heard, they also feel seen. And that's what enables them to connect with one another, with you, the leader, with the larger organization. Another practice centers around how inclusive leaders handle information. They're open. They ensure that people have the information required to make good decisions. They share information freely as is appropriate. Now, obviously, they don't do all this oversharing. I mean, obviously, any leader should have the wisdom to know what should and should not be shared and with whom. Difference here is that inclusive leaders don't hoard or hide information to maintain dominance, power, or control. They recognize the value in keeping people apprised of what's going on. They also want insights from other people, so that's how sharing information matters, because it's a way to get that insight from other people. Opening the flow of information is really hard for some people. Information really is how they stay on top, protect their silos, and feel important. But you got to get over the ego and create an information flow that benefits everyone, that benefits the entire enterprise. The goal in creating a more open information flow is to form better, more collaborative partnerships. I've alluded to power, domination, and control. Those are the elements of inclusive leadership that people shy away from. They don't want to talk about it. But the interesting thing is this. It matters. They matter a lot. Power, domination, and control are at the heart of many of the problems that we face regarding DEI. I'll tell you, I lost a consulting contract that was focused on creating DEI interventions and progress in a trade association because I thought it was important to surface the issues of power, domination, and control. Senior leaders did not want to address those realities. They were deeply invested in avoiding systemic change, maintaining the status quo, and putting a lot of lipstick on a pig. When it was time for contract renewal, we parted ways, but very amicably. We both understood we were philosophically at opposite ends of the spectrum. I believe you gotta excavate the deepest elements of systems. If that means that some people get squeamish, that is okay, because that's how progress happens. Power, domination, control, they are real factors in the inclusion equation. Power is how people or groups use their influence. It's how they make, coerce, encourage people to act or behave in a certain way. Power or influence, they're also factors in how people think. Messages from people deemed powerful may become more impactful in how people see the world, the work, the other. Persuasive uses of power can change how people think, believe, and behave. I want to explore a few more practices that create inclusion. And attention to equitable talent development is a must. This means paying attention to who gets opportunities to develop their skills, get advanced training, get formal education. Those are all factors that weigh into promotion and upward mobility. Inclusive leaders understand that and they work hard to be sure that those developmental opportunities are offered uniformly. Sometimes, lots of times, bias creeps in and we don't even know it. And I'm not talking about racial or gender bias, though they are real. I'm talking about personal bias. And this happens when leaders select the people that they perceive to be the most driven or the most talented. Those are the people they pick for further development. They think they're pouring into the people with the highest potential. But instead, what they're really doing is creating an environment where favoritism is the norm. If you're investing in talent, invest in everyone. Find appropriate development opportunities for every employee. Not only is this inclusive, it is a smart way to promote retention. Another important practice that promotes inclusion is the intentional solicitation of diverse perspectives. I mentioned this earlier, and I do think it's worth repeating. Don't just invite people into decision-making who think like you. Be curious enough, be brave enough to seek out people who have different experiences, different exposures, and different opinions. Yep, makes the work more complicated because you're actively soliciting ideas that may not align with the approach that you want. But isn't that the purpose of being inclusive, drawing out other voices so that the end result is representative of the best collective intellect and abilities available? I want to give you an example of this. A post-acute care company was hemorrhaging frontline staff. Post-acute care, that's nursing homes for people who aren't in that world, but they were hemorrhaging frontline staff. They just could not keep employees in the patient-facing roles. The HRVP and his team, they tried bonuses, incentives, free uniforms, reserved parking, employee of the month. They tried everything they could think of. Yep, that was the problem. They tried everything they could think of, and there was a wide world of thoughts beyond what they knew. They were limited. They were bounded by the world of interventions that they knew. Wasn't until a VP from another division spoke up and shared what she was doing to keep good people in the marketing department. They had had a lot of turnover, but they had created novel solutions and had, you know, stemmed that tide of turnover. First thing she suggested was interviewing employees who had tenure of more than 2 years and finding out what was keeping them there. And she suggested that the interviews not be conducted by HR. She said she thought they'd be more forthcoming with their peers. So the HR department trained a peer team responsible for gathering feedback from the people who stayed. And that feedback was very valuable. It gave them ideas like creating a buddy system for new hires and having managers and supervisors in each facility take responsibility for onboarding instead of HR. They also came up with this touchpoint program that required people from all departments to touch or connect with new hires weekly. This connected them to lots of different people throughout the facility, and it fostered community. New employees felt like they had come into a new, welcoming community. These other seemingly small suggestions came from the group of managers who were now responsible for doing the orientations. They suggested food. They wanted food. They thought it was ridiculous that the company wasn't welcoming new hires with breakfast and lunch at their orientation. And I agree, people want to eat. We like to eat. Now, I got to tell you, this ruffled feathers in the HR department because orientation, onboarding, that was their sacred ground. But by being willing to listen to perspectives other than their own, they were able to create a whole different onboarding experience. And over time, that contributed to better retention. I need to move on just a bit. Another practice essential to inclusive leadership is the willingness to call out behavior that isn't inclusive. And this is where the courageousness that I mentioned comes into play. You cannot be an inclusive leader if you're not willing to identify people, policies, systems, anything that excludes, marginalizes, or alienates individuals or groups of individuals. And this is where it gets uncomfortable for many would-be inclusive leaders. They want to talk about creating equity, welcoming diversity, and all that. But when they're required to take a meaningful stand, it becomes really apparent that talk is all they're about. I see so much of that now. So much of it. And it's so disheartening. People know the language of inclusion, but they fear the behaviors. They want to treat people fairly, but when confronted with systemic issues, they just cannot take the risk of standing up and standing out. Oftentimes, they can't even address the one-on-one or team issues. I'm not saying that it's easy to take a stand. I'm saying that if you're an inclusive leader, you have to have zero tolerance for certain behavior. You have to make that zero tolerance known. You have to model what you want to see. You know, hypocrisy is easy to spot, and it erodes any trust that may be there. Addressing racist, misogynistic, homophobic, ageist, sexist, and all the other isms requires a really strong set of communication skills. We have to find ways to reach and teach each other. And if that isn't possible, leaders have to hold them accountable for acceptable behavior in the workplace. You've got to hold the people who report to you accountable. First, you have to hold yourself accountable. If you can't wrap your head around addressing behavior that doesn't foster inclusion, think about it from a risk management perspective. The longer you tolerate what should be intolerable, the longer and the more you put the company, the organization, the enterprise at risk. I don't just mean lawsuits, although lawsuits are important. I mean the risk of reputation. When a company gets a reputation as not being a welcome workplace, there's a talent drain, and there's a strong likelihood that a lot of good people will not want you as their employer. If you know you struggle with taking a stand, get support. Find allies, like-minded people who will encourage you and give you ideas for constructive confrontations that actually promote collaboration and bridge building. I use the word confrontation, and I know some people are like, I don't want to confront. I don't want to confront. That's such a negative thing. It's what you make it. We can confront in polite, kind, loving, healthy ways. We can call people out on their behavior in ways that are supportive, in ways that are honest, and in ways that are not attacking. So, yes, we have to have constructive confrontations. It's time for me to wrap this up. I cannot think of a time when bridge building has been more necessary. The divisiveness, the hatred that's spreading in our nation and in our world make it an imperative to form human connections, human bonds. I'm not talking about bonds with people who are just like you. I'm talking broader. I'm talking about recognizing the humanity in every person, recognizing it, respecting it, and embracing it. We have to take individual and collective responsibility for building bridges of hope in our shared humanity. I hope that you're going to use these skills, these competencies, these traits to become an inclusive leader. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening to this podcast. I hope you got tools that you'll actually use and share. Subscribe if you haven't already. I add new and relevant leadership learning all of the time. If you haven't visited the Smichael Speaks YouTube channel, check it out. There's all sorts of new content. All of this is virtual leadership learning that will help you soar.